So we're limiting the time for the panel, so we'll have some time at the end to you know, follow up on questions and have more discussion. I just wanted to kind of highlight some of the points around capacity and some of the issues around grappling around power that often, from my perspective, anarchists really have a taboo around the idea of power. And I think from organizing practice, we need to look at new eyes as far as power, redefining as power with rather than over, and have those frank discussions like Mustafa was talking about. Okay, do we want a movement of anarchists or an anarchist movement? And how is that tension between those both ideas play out in the short and long run? Another example I can give about tenant organizing is there's this idea, another taboo, about reform versus revolution and compromise. And if I were to go door knocking at Christ's building and say, hi, I'm your tenant organizer and I'm here, join the tenant union, which I feel like a lot of times anarchists try to do, they try to do recruitment rather than organizing, I'd be marginalized as a radical pretty quick, and I, versus if I have a conversation and explain the process of power and build power collectively, and then people realize that they are actually, I'm spending time, investing time in a mutual relationship that I feel is more inherent in anarchist theory. But those contradictions, I hope that we can talk about later on. And, just because the vote wouldn't go to a tent union doesn't mean I give up or my politics are any different. I feel like there's a lot of assumptions about, working in the community and somehow inherent compromises and so what I'm hoping, we can bring out some of the issues that people have worked on, but we're going to go on to the next panelists. Jason and Tanya both have been involved in the Vermont Worker Center. They helped bring it together, and they have some lessons in really the story of the Vermont Worker Center. I feel like is a useful story for us to learn from.
Sure. So I'm Tanya. I'm going to start at the beginning of these questions that I was given here. So the Vermont Workers Center sort of started with a small anarchist collective of people from around here, basically meeting and talking about a lot of these issues, about issues of power, organizing, how to organize as anarchist people, and basically trying to come up with what we felt had the most potential to create real change, what had the most revolutionary potential to us in our analysis. This all sounds really far away from me right now because it was many, many years ago. But basically, what we chose to do sort of as our first project is what I'm going to share today. And that is, we chose to do a project based largely on the fact that we wanted to work with people who were like ourselves. So people who were in our own communities, people who were facing the same issues as we were facing, because it certainly didn't feel like the right thing to do to choose something that we weren't experiencing ourselves. So we chose to work around economic issues, and to focus on our own community. So our first project was actually, I don't even remember how we got hooked up with it anymore, other than the fact that we just know people around here, was a group of janitors who were fighting a privatization campaign in the Barry schools, so not far from here. Getting some nods. So it was a group of people who were organized, did have a union, although it didn't seem to be helping them very much at the time. And we worked with them to basically build power, and eventually were successful in preventing their jobs from being privatized. And again, I really connected with a lot of the, and I know this is a lot of what this conversation is about, this whole like service versus anarchist revolution kind of dichotomy. I think that for us, a lot of the issues around power were essential. You know, it wasn't a question of is power good, is power bad. I mean, it was just we needed it to win. And basically, what we did is we met with the janitors numerous times, and we kind of followed their lead in a lot of ways. I don't think that it was an issue of we were coming in with a plan. We certainly did not come in saying this is how this should be done. We came in with a certain set of principles, with some experience, but basically sat down and said, what do you think would work to get the to get this going, to win? And we really kind of followed their lead because they knew the answer to that question and we didn't. And so basically we, with them, usually paired up, went out door to door in that community and talked with people about what did they think about this. We framed it very clearly in class politics. It was, you know, a very easy conversation to have with people. It was their community, it was their kids, it was their money. And, you know, we basically just said, look, what would you rather? Would you rather spend your money on keeping your schools safe and clean and supporting your fellow community members? Or would you rather have that money go to people that have no accountability and save some money to give the superintendent of schools a raise this year? You know, and people don't need any convincing. You know, I don't think that it's a question of we're going to come in there and tell them the answer or that we know something that they don't know. We have much different words for it. But everybody got it. Everybody understands what capitalism is and what it means in their own lives. We basically just went out and talked with people about it. And people showed up at school board meetings irate, completely irate, and demanded that it be different. And that was our first campaign.
So as part of, I guess, the anarchist part of that,
thank you.
was that, I mean, now the Worker Center has a staff and is a nonprofit organization and is a coalition of different unions and environmental groups and nonprofits. But then it was, you know, an idea mostly and a bunch of activists who wanted to do something. Can everybody hear me? Yeah, okay.
Can you speak up?
Yeah, you're kind of way back.
You could come up here too. There's space up here.
There's two chairs.
So in terms of the anarchist part of that, we our group was called Number 10 Collective, and what we did was, when we came into it, it was a coalition between us, the teachers and support staff union, the janitors who were in another union, which was sort of just completely missing in action. So they were the union. They just participated. There was no interaction with their union staff or anything like that, which was good. And then there was us. And so what we did in terms of like trying to promote our anarchist point of view is we wanted the name, you know, Number 10 Collective Revolutionary Anarchist, what was it, Love and Rage Revolutionary Anarchist Federation, on everything we put out. So we had that on there. And so, of course, there was some discussion about that within the coalition meetings. And it just turned out to not be a very big deal. I mean, nobody really cared. They were willing to work with us because we worked hard and we did what we said we would do. But I guess what I would say about anarchism in that is that it wasn't really relevant, you know, in terms of like talking about our ideas. We would hand out copies of Love and Rage magazine and they were like, okay, you know.
Some of them even read it.
Some people read it. We had some interesting, you know, we did a lot of drinking with people afterwards and we would talk about it sometimes with them. But it was sort of like, you know, it's like, I have this idea, you should, you know. It wasn't like, you know, there's this really powerful movement out there which is battering down the doors of capitalism and, you know. As we got involved in this, I mean, I think there were a couple of interesting things for us about it. One was certainly the class analysis was very clear, and that was what Tanya said was our door-to-door rap, right? I mean, we're giving the superintendent of schools makes more money than the governor of Vermont. We're giving him a raise, and these folks make $10 an hour, and they're going to have their jobs cut and be paid minimum wage. You know, I mean, that was the rap. Would you come out and support them, right? And we got people to sign a petition, and we packed these series of school board meetings and got them to make a commitment that they wouldn't do it. But I would also point out that there was another part of that which was just as important, which is one of the janitor's mother was this woman in Barrie City who, and probably still is, you cannot pass a school budget. In Vermont, the towns all vote on the school budgets. You can't pass a school budget in Barrie without her. Right, she knows everybody, and everybody knows that. So she comes to these meetings, and she sits in the front row, you know, and just, I don't think she even ever said anything, but all the school board members saw her there, right? And I would say having her there was probably as important as, you know, the other 125 people in the room, you know, and that's just a reality about how that community's structured and who knows who and where the power is. And we didn't really figure that out until things were going on, but, you know, That's leadership, and she was providing leadership in a way that we were just focused on. If we have enough numbers, we can shift power to our side, and the school board will have to listen to us. And we weren't really thinking about this other part of power, which was how the community itself was structured. And so I think that was an important lesson for us. In terms of the anarchist part of it, we were sort of walked away from it going, okay, you know, how do we make that part of things more relevant to actually doing organizing that builds a broad-based class movement where people have their own directly democratic, self-controlled organizations that respond to the needs of our lives, right? And that was our goal. So, you know, but even when people had those, they didn't tend to see them in a political context. And there's a lot of, in Vermont, I mean, there's a lot of bad unions, but there's quite a few good unions that work in exactly that way. I think there's some in Montreal and Quebec too. But people who participate in them and use them in a very powerful and democratic bottom-up way don't see them as part of a broader social movement, right? So, you know, I guess that would be a plus side of doing anarchist organizing, labor organizing, class organizing. It didn't come back to hurt us. We were kind of like, huh? A negative experience that we had was quite a few years later where, I mean, one of the things that we experienced in being involved with the Vermont Worker Center is mostly anarchists were pretty transient. You know, they'd be around for a couple of years and then they'd be gone. So I would say that would be a downside. And, you know, I don't really mean that as a criticism. It's just, you know, what I've noticed over the years is they mostly don't live here anymore. They're not politically active. We attempted to start a union in alliance with a national union that it would be a union for people who worked in very small businesses downtown who, you know, had very few rights, who tended to get paid very little, and very little voice. So it's mostly retail establishments in downtown Montpelier. And it was actually a copy of something Barrie had had like 100 years ago. So where there was sort of a union standard rate, and you had certain rights, and you couldn't just be fired. And when we were doing that, we had quite a few people do salting. So they were anarchists. Some of them moved into the area. A lot of them were anarchists, and they got jobs at these various downtown businesses. And as we started the organizing campaign, they constituted the majority of the organizing committee. And, you know, many of them had, this is the kind of work they were doing anyway. You know, some of them already worked in those businesses. So it wasn't like they were, you know, rich people who decided this be an interesting thing to do. They needed to make a living like anybody else. But as we moved through the campaign, you know, one of the realities of labor organizing is, you know, and I guess probably any sort of organizing that's not based on a political vision, which is that, you know, it's majoritarian, right? You know, your union is everybody who you happen to work with, no matter whether they're Seventh-day Adventists or they think Lyndon LaRouche is great or whatever. And you unify around the issues that are important to the majority. And, you know, you can like it or hate it, but that's the way it goes. And these were folks who, you know, I think one of the critiques of that campaign were that we never found the people who were the real leaders. you know, and there are different ways to find leaders. Sometimes it's skill level or seniority or just who they are as an individual. But we never got that level of leadership that if that person did it, you know, pretty much everybody else where they worked was going to as well. And I think one of the reasons we didn't is because we relied on people whose motivation was primarily political, ideological from the beginning. And I think that was a mistake to, you know, work with these people who were well-intentioned and hardworking and some of them talented organizers, but it was a real downfall, I think, in the end for the campaign. So, you know, as far as that goes, I mean, I think, you know, the labor movement is not a good place for idealism. And not, you know, the way most anarchists get involved in the labor movement is by being staff, which is how I did it, and I would not recommend that. In terms of building a movement, assuming that's your goal. If you want to gain skills as an organizer, it's a great way to do it. But, you know, I think one of the things that sort of as you know, our anarchist collective eventually fell apart, the group we were part of, Love and Rage, fell apart. And I think, you know, the obvious point that you have to make about, you know, doing organizing as anarchists is the thing that we had, and I think OCAP is maybe the exception to the rule, was, so we're out there promoting these ideas, we're handing out Love and Rage, and, you know, what you're really doing is, you know, promoting a, I don't know, what is a set of beliefs, whatever you want to call it, but it's not an existing alternative, right? And I think one of the rules of doing organizing is, you know, if I knock on somebody's door, or I go to see them, we're talking about what can be done and what is possible, not about an idea of what should be possible and when, right? And the anarchist movement is not a real existing alternative that is something people join to better their lives. And most organizing, for better or for worse, is done around self-interest, right? What people experience in their lives. So, you know, we never, I think we sort of said, all right, we're going to try and build this directly democratic movement, and we can't create this social movement to relate to because it doesn't exist, you know? And, you know, I think that that's sort of the contradiction is, you know, the labor movement or any other movement is not going to be that movement which changes the world, right? Which changes the structures that we live under so that it resembles an anarchist society. And the anarchist movement or scene or whatever is also not going to be that movement. And so I think the difficulty is, you know, in terms of if you want to be a revolutionary, for myself, my own belief is that means you have to be relevant to the community that you live in and in seeking to change that. But in a day and an age where you don't really have a good organization to, you know, as an anarchist to relate to, I'm not sure what that means beyond trying to do organizing in a bottom-up, directly democratic way and bring in a broader political context. And it always seems to be the conundrum with anarchists is just that we've been at the same point of starting to build organizations for as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. And it never seems to get any further, you know, and it's not a criticism of the people in NEFAC, you know, for example, who are sort of the regional thing around here. I think they work quite hard and they do a good job, but there just aren't enough of them, you know. And so until there is that actual existing organization that makes itself relevant, I think that bridge, that chasm that you can't really cross as somebody doing mass organizing is going to exist, you know. And then when there is that mass movement, then you actually have something to relate to. But for now, it's kind of, you know, you're almost like the Marxist, the crazy Spartacist with a pamphlet. Not quite, but you're almost like him.